Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminate Anonymous podcast, your source for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. I'm your host, Eric, and with me is Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And Don.
Hey.
Hey, guys, we're all here again, and this week we've got quite a bit of news from GW. We've got two tournaments to review, as well as some other hot topics, and then at the end, as always, we review the ITC Top 10 and upcoming tournaments in the ITC. So, start off with the news coming from good old Nottingham. We got a new box set. Ray, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Certainly. So, they announced today a new box set. It's called Wake the Dead. This is a two-army box. It's got, of course, Primaris Space Marines. And the other faction is Eldar. It looks like each side is roughly a patrol size. So on the Space Marine side, you've got a new Primaris Lieutenant model, a set of five Primaris Intercessors, a set of five Primaris Reavers, and a squad of three Primaris Interceptors. On the Eldar side, you've got a new Plastic Spirit Seer, 10 Guardians, 5 Wraith Guard, and a Wave Serpent.
Overall, pretty strong building box, blocks to build an army off of.
Yeah. And it's basically in the same vein as both Forgebane and Tooth and Claw. It's not going to be severely limited. It's going to have some basic rules. And of course, there's the two new plastic models, and both of these appear to be full-on separate sprues, so we could see these in clan packs in the future.
Pretty cool. Does it come with any terrain or any other gizmos on the side?
Nope.
So just two boxes, two small armies, ready to go. Pretty cool.
One of the questions I have is, why do they feel like they need to update a plastic model to a plastic model before they update any of the Aspect Warriors?
Good question. I have no idea.
The Lieutenant? So, I think the Spirit Seer. The Spirit Seer? That's not plastic. That was Failcast.
Ah.
Now, our Seers, those have been plastic for a while now, but Fire Seers have been the only psychers that, or them and the biker riding warlocks are the only ones that have been in plastic. So, now in the case of the
Eldrad too.
Yeah, good point. I forget about that one. But the case of Lieutenant, this one looks to be the first standard space primary space marine that's in an independent sprue. The other ones that were generic came in the starter box, and they were interspersed with other models. I was just going to say, so if we see a clan pack that's, just a lieutenant, it's going to be this one that's coming out.
Also, while I was reading the community page, it seems like there's a lot more lore attached to this, that this particular planet that was already teased in the Orc Dragster, or whatever the new was, a Speed Freaks box game, is also this supposed to be a big deal in terms of how the background will go moving forward.
This one was Vigilus, right?
Correct.
Isn't that the same one that Tooth and Claw spoke about?
Yes.
Yep. So I remember seeing something about this one, maybe their new Armageddon, the planet that keeps getting fought over.
So we'll see what that brings down the road. So exciting to see some new stuff finally coming out, a couple new models. Some more new models released also on Forge World. Looks like not only are we getting a new Necromunda model, which is kind of nice because we have a cardboard cutout of it in our hobby store, but new Necron Super Heavy seems to be headed our way.
Yeah, the one thing I wish we could have seen is its scale. Put something up next to it. Because this thing, it looks a lot...
that in the earlier release of it with the not painted photos.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is actually about as big as a knight.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it,
it's really big.
Yeah, I love the fact that it looks like it's a spider merged with one of those Triarch Stalkers.
I think what's interesting about this whole thing is this is the second tease we've gotten, but we still don't have a name for this unit.
Yeah, they, yeah, we do. It's called the Seraptic Heavy Construct.
Okay, I thought that was their working title. I didn't realize that was the official name. Okay,
well, interesting. That's what the that's what the article calls it.
And they did give in the article a preview of its main weapon. Apparently it has multiple weapon options, but it has two of these main guns that they described.
Yeah. The picture shows two different guns on it, so...
So, Don, you had to look at these guns viable, or just another big chunk of plastic?
I think they'll be extremely viable. The biggest reason why people are looking down on them right now is because they're considering... Well, what happens when it shoots at, you know, the 3++ Imperial Knight? To which I'm looking at it as the wheels are turning as far as the ability for that knight to keep activating that 3++ symbol. And, I mean, it has two guns that can fire two separate things, and it's still a whole lot of las cannon shots, effectively. It's really good.
The thing that struck me the biggest was it does have a random number of shots, but it was 3d3 as opposed to the usual d6 shots, which is just learning from playing with Harlequin bikes. That's really hard to make strong tactical decisions with. It just, so I think it's, yeah, it's the same number of total shots, but it seems like a much smaller range in the randomness. So I was pretty excited about that.
I will definitely say that I have thoroughly enjoyed 3d3 shots on like my Derridaeos compared to, you know, d6 shots on like a frag missile.
Yeah,
it's a lot more like if you expect your weapon to do something, it's more likely to do it.
Exactly. So continuing on, it's a 36-inch range weapon, strength 8, EP minus 3. It is damage d6, so still a little bit of variability, but as I mentioned, 3d3 shots. And if you roll a 6 to wound, it inflicts an additional mortal wound. And supposedly the weapon, this construct comes with two of these guns stock. Don't know what the additional options are or the point costs or what the rest of the stat line looks like. But hopefully this will be coming out soon. I'm assuming time for Christmas, but either way, this might be my first foray into using the American Forge world if this comes out soon. I think I'll get two of those to flank my pylon and go, take that. Of course, but then the metal will probably switch again, and I will have be woefully behind the times. But anyway. That being said, the orc buggies are still for sale, so if you're interested, my old buggies are still taking up space in my hobby room for no apparent reason. So quite a bit of news. Other key news points. Everybody may remember years past, but people always ask, hey, when's the old podcast getting back together? And this one as well, it's up to Neil. So what's Neil up to these days? Neil actually has become a game designer. He's releasing his own game. Just want to say congratulations, Mr. Gilstrap, because his face is Kickstarter is completely funded in 48 hours for his new game. So just want to give a shout out to you, Neil. Nice job. So appreciate it. Starting your own game from scratch, including miniatures and cards and boards, is not an easy endeavor. So the one thing we have not talked about, we're thinking, and should have been out by now, and realistically, if Games Workshop is to make their promised timetable, should be out sometime this week, is the new FAQ. So any... Being that we're recording on Monday, my bet is it comes out tomorrow.
One can only hope.
One can only hope. I'm with you there at this point. I would be excited just for it to come out at this point. It's just something literally kind of get that. I really want to make changes to my list. I want to finish painting some models, but I just kind of want to wait until what is the new meta going to be like as they make changes. So
So I'm, despite our weekly podcast, I never really get a good feel for what the what we're seeing in the meta locally. Is there anything that's particularly being exploited that we could see changed in the FAQ, or that you'd like to see changed in the FAQ?
So, granted, when you say locally, one of the things that I'll always say is Arizona has a weird meta, just in general. But the most obviously exploited thing that's going on right now is the command point farms for factions other than the faction that's farming the command points. So it's just one of those things where Imperium in particular, if you just put that 180 points of the Loyal 32 into your list, that basically you don't even have to interact with anyone except for sit on objectives. They can give you, you know, an extra like 15 to 20 command points throughout the course of the game. It's bad.
Okay.
And it really does affect that there's several lists that are just doing really, really well. We talked about, which is usually a Castellan with some small detachment of Imperial Guard, which is your CP factory, followed by usually a Blood Angels detachment of some kind. And it's not that the Knights are overpowered. It's just that they have an unlimited number of, or feels like unlimited number of command points, which makes a very limited tactical resource. When it's flowing freely, then you can make simple decisions pretty simply, such as rotate Iron Shields every turn. Okay. And it's, yeah, that's probably the biggest one there. As far as, I mean, I've heard a few squabblings here and there, but honestly, it sounds like more wishlisting and complaining than actual bona fide rumors at this point.
Yeah, the only other thing I can possibly see, just due to what I've overheard from the Nova event, was that there might be changes to charge distances when it comes to units that have the fly keyword. Or maybe just movement in general when it comes to the fly keyword. Because they were not expecting it to be used that way, where you could stay on top of a 12-inch tall piece of terrain and have a 2-inch charge on someone on the very bottom level.
Which, unfortunately, rules as written, is exactly legal. And they did make a ruling. GW was on site, and the rules developer actually, hey, this is how we're going to play it this weekend. And I was like, interesting. Okay. So we'll see if that becomes official. I don't think we'll see it in the FAQ, but I'm just going to throw it out there just for sheer discussion point. Age of Sigmar came out with their new demon summoning rules. I probably expect to see that in Chapter Approved as opposed to the FAQ.
I don't know if I see them really doing that for 40K. If you take a look at what they did to like counteract it, they, at least in some of the models, they raised the points, especially for Pink Horrors as an example. There is a huge difference in points on like those, because at that point you're forcing people to pay for the fact that they'll be able to pop out Blue Horrors and then Brimstone Horrors. And while, yeah, it's great that you can do that, it's kind of unfair to anybody who doesn't have those models.
When does that ever stop, GW? It's more reason to buy more stuff. But I see your point. Yeah, I mean, basically, for those of you not familiar, they grouped various demon, basically, packages. So instead of just trying to summon a unit and we have to exceed their power level on 3 dice, basically, you can summon, and they're kind of like set packages of demons. And if I remember right, though, they are free of cost, though, now. So kind of like a Harkinger back to the days of 6th and 7th edition, where you can grow your army to 3,000 points and by turn 2.
Yeah, and especially with 40K, only, I mean, at least in the AOS, there are multiple armies that have the ability to do that. In 40K, that would just be demons.
Yeah, that kind of took me off guard that the Seraphon and a couple other armies have summoning abilities, which I was like, what is this? But anyway, so maybe that is, I don't know, we'll see. Let's see how it comes out. That's just my kind of bold prediction for now. So, of course, I have the freedom to be wrong, which I'm really good at. So what I'm not wrong about is we're about to take a break, and then after the break, we'll go over our two GT level tournaments from last weekend. See you after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do Fantasy combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. As we mentioned, two big events to talk about from the previous weekend. First one we'll start off with is the Harvester of Souls 2018. Interesting event. They make no apologies of it. They run several other events, including Storm of Silence, using the ITC format. But this one, they decided to go their own route, spice it up a little bit. So just a quick review on how they ran through it. It was a battle point event. You were able to get 60 points based off your actual winnings, another 60 points based off of appearance, and then another 60 points based off of sportsmanship. We'll go over the scoring for the individual battles, and we'll talk about best general in a second. But Ray, you said you were pretty intrigued by the sportsmanship scoring.
Yeah. So the way that they decided to do it is there were 60 points available. 5 per game checklist, 5 per favorite game vote, and then 10 points for having your army listed formatted well and readable. And then what they'd do is they would have only potential deductions for poor behavior. So I'm sure that's not probably just, oh, I lost, so I'm gonna take away points. It sounds like someone was choosing whether or not that would actually happen.
And that checklist looks something like this here. There are simply five things to mark off. Opponent has relevant rules, so it's kind of nice. You brought a codex with you. It's always handy. Opponent army appearance was clearly marked to indicate faction, and any counts as models were indicated and played fairly. Wonder what that's talking about. Opponent has prepared to play their army in a timely manner, including this methods to reduce time wasting and on time for match. Opponent was someone who you'd like to play again and must be able to explain not checking an item. And so if you did not check an item, you need to have understanding of why that was. And further deductions can be made by the tournament organizer's discretion. So pretty much following a lot of the floor rules, but it's nice to see some of the people held actually accountable for it, because some army-less missions are a little difficult to read from time to time. Now, the overall tournament standings, it was a 5-round event, 2 hours, 45 minutes, 2,000 points, Battleforged armies only, and primary victory points were scored from 0 to 18 points. Each mission will feature a board control-focused primary mission. They are pulled from or inspired by ATC, Nova Open, but also 40K and Age of Sigmar book missions. Oh my gosh, they're using Sigmar missions. Ah! There's a secondary one, and these are simply based off of the sounds like the Nova Open and ITC Champions missions. And then a tertiary missions, which are worth up to 6 points. And mostly those are kill point differentials. Now, what's interesting here is they took your total points out of that array of 60 points, right? 18 plus 12 plus 6, whatever that adds up to, 36 points. And then, so they take each player's differential from that, and depending on how much you won by, determine how many points you got. So when we talk about the overall standings for this event, the most you can get is a 12-point victory towards your battle points. So, for example, if you absolutely crushed your opponent, you would get 12 points. They would get 0. If you won by at least 9 points but less than 12, you got 11 points. Your opponent got 1 point, and it keeps going. So finally, if there's no difference, each player got a 6-point tie. All right, ready to score at home there? Good. All right, let's go over the top 8 as they appeared. Based on this scoring system, and right off the bat, we have a 3-way tie for 7th place. So that is shared by Adam Martinez with Peach Flang Prophets of the Flesh, Josh Bagwell with Nurgle Demons, and Laura Taylor with Inari. In sixth place, Cody Morris with Imperial Knights. Fifth place, Steve Deitch with Death Guard. Fourth place, Keaton Marshman with Imperial Knights. Third place, Zachary Nelson with Imperial Knights. Second place, going undefeated, was Colin Sherman with High Fleet Kraken. But your winner of the Harvester of Souls 2018 is none other than Sean Morgan with the Tau Empire. Okay. Ray, what do we have in Sean's list?
We've got a Vanguard detachment that has a commander with Gold Star Battlesuit and four Fusion Blasters, three Firesight Marksmen with Markerlight and Pulse Pistol, then a Battalion detachment with a Cadre Fireblade with Markerlight and two Shield Drones, a commander in the Gold Star Battlesuit with four Fusion Blasters and two Shield Drones, three 5-man strike teams. Looks like all of them are with pulse rifles. And then we've got three squads of stealth suits with lots of burst cannons.
Looks like he went minimum size here, three units of three. Interesting.
Yeah.
And drone controllers on the Shasviri. I never know how to pronounce that, the sergeant.
Yeah, Shasui, or however people want to pronounce it. In any other case, it would look like gibberish.
Yep.
So there's for the fast attack, there are two squads of drones. I think it's all gun drones and then a tactical drone, which I don't remember anything about.
Tactical drones, or technical drones, whatever the heck they're called, they repair battlesuits.
Okay.
Which is like Riptide.
All right. And then that's followed up by another battalion detachment with a Kyder Fireblade, the commander with Enforcer battlesuit this time, with four cyclic ion blasters and two shield drones. Three more squads of strike teams. One of them has two shield drones. Oh no, two of them have two shield drones. And they've all got pulse rifles. And then two Riptide battle suits, each with two smart missile systems, advanced targeting systems, and the heavy burst cannon.
All right, so he's got quite a bit of guys on the ground and a couple of big guys to absorb some damage and a whole lot of drones to keep everybody safe. Don, how do you see this list?
He definitely built it for the mission format, judging by the fact that half of the points that were possible to obtain were strictly from board control, and he has an army of all fairly fast OPSEC units. That's definitely one of the ways that he probably won, was getting all those little guys just bolt onto objectives. And even the non-OBSEC ones, it still probably just outnumbers his opponents. Other than that, do we know what sept he was running? Was it Tau?
So the third battalion, I did notice it said Tau. The first one is not labeled. The second one is not labeled. Only the third one actually says that it is.
It's probably a whole army of Tau. And the big thing with that is that Tau is actually really good at killing Imperial Knights, because if they get at least one wound through, the rest of the army shooting at that unit gets plus one to wound, and they shoot a lot.
I thought it was interesting with the Marker Lights, so probably, you know, I could see the Riptides hogging that, but. Or is that something that he's just going to point and click and use the Cold Star fusion suits to destroy what needs to be killed?
Well, remember, Marker Lights don't work like that anymore. You put them on a unit, they're there until the phase is over.
So they have both the Riptides and the Cold Stars could benefit from the same Marker Lights. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, even the basic strike team is probably hitting on threes, your only ones.
That's right. At first, I didn't think he had enough Marker Lights, but there's also that stratagem where you can add, was it D3 plus one for every hit?
So it's, so long as you apply one Marker Light, you can, for, I think it's one command point, add D3 to it.
And you need 5 to get the max benefit, correct?
Yeah, 5 is where your plus one bliss skill. 1 is where you're rolling ones. and the other ones don't really matter a whole lot for his army. Except for Ignor's cover can.
Interesting. So like you said, I think it's very much tailored to the mission format. So do you see this being as successful in ITC as long as you took the right secondaries, or would you have to make some wholesale changes?
Nope, because Tau suffers in the ITC because it hands out kill points like candy. All those drones count as kill points. All the fireware teams count as kill points. What was it? So a sixth of their total score came from kill points. Just to give you an idea of how Tau actually did okay in that.
Interesting. Yeah, you bring up a good point. Yeah, so six out of the total, 36. Yeah, so one out of 6 points came from the, and that was only kill point differential. So as long as he was keeping up with other players, he would still be in the running. Yeah, you bring up a good point. So it's, wow. Yeah, it is very much geared to this particular event. Interesting. Let's see if the second place player, who actually also went undefeated, shared that same list building strategy. Colin Sherman came in second with High Fleet Kraken. So Colin brought with him, the first was a battalion detachment. Started with a Swarm Lord, Neurothrope, and a Hive Tyrant with wings and Twin Devourers with worms. And he adds a relic, which I'm something mutation. I'm not familiar with that. He's got an abbreviation that I'm not familiar with.
Give me a second. I'm looking that up now.
In the troop slot, he's got two units of 20 Gene Stealers. Five of which have acid maws, the rest have rending claws and scything talons. He's got one unit of 30 Harmagaunts, one unit of 19 Harmagaunts, a unit of 5 Hive Guard, and 3 Venom Thropes. Second attachment is a battalion of Gene Stealer Cult, 2 Maguses, and 3 Neophytes with auto guns. And then he rounds out the list with an auxiliary support detachment of Astra Militarum with a platoon commander. Of course, the Grand Strategist in Kurvas Aquila. Because otherwise, why would you leave home without it?
Mm-hmm. So the relic is the chameleonic mutation.
Ah, that's what that's supposed to say.
The Kraken. Yeah, it's like the Kraken one. Your opponent must subtract 1 from all hit rolls for ranged weapons that target the model.
There we go.
I really don't want to be that guy. But Colin Sherman cheated. If you're an auxiliary support detachment, you don't have access to stratagems or relics.
That is true. Now, Nick Natavati got around it because he had another detachment of the same faction, so he was able to do that. But if there's no other guard or Astra Militarum detachment, whoops.
Yeah, so he could have had Grand Strategist, because that's still, you can get the World of Trait for that guy. But there's no way he has access to Kurvas Aquila.
Dun, dun, dun. I need a soundbite for that. That does suck.
That's unfortunate.
But hey, that's one of the reasons why we post a list, so we have peer review on the internet community. All right, so looking over his list, he also rattles off his psychic powers, which I was interesting. I never did get a clear understanding. Are we supposed to be choosing our psychic powers as part of our list or not? But interesting. For this event, appears to be the case. He's got mass hypnosis on both Maguses. Magi? I don't know. The Flyrant has both psychic scream and the horror. The Neurothrope has the horror. And then the Swarmlord has catalyst and onslaught. So, basic overall strategy here, what's going on with this list?
So, it definitely looks like a variation thereof of the mind control list that works fairly well against Castellan Knights. To take over the Castellan, you get rid of one of its missiles and cause it to basically destroy a large portion of your opponent's army. On top of that, it's still really fast Gene Stealers, which tear things apart, which, especially with the Castellan list, tears apart its screen. Which gives you points, gets rid of their ability to score, just holding the ground and everything like that. So it's definitely a very, very aggressive list.
What's the best way to defend yourself from this?
The best way to defend yourself from that is make sure that there's no way that he can cold ambush close enough to grab your Castellan, if you're a Castellan army.
Which is about a third of our listeners who seems to be that way when we look through the lists. But it's so key here, screening, making sure he doesn't get passed at this point. If you had to do target priority, where would you focus your time and your shooting at?
For his stuff, if I had the ability to, I'd try to get rid of those magi.
He's got enough bodies where that could be really hard to do.
I mean, and assuming that for some odd reason the TO said it was okay for the platoon commander to be what he is, I'd probably try to get that guy too, to make it so he can use all the rerolls for CP. Yeah, it just depends on what you have, since like if you're a Castellan list, you just fire those Oathbreaker missiles at that guy. And on a 4-up, he dies.
All right. Third place was Zach Nelson. We've talked about this 1,000 times, just to give you a quick idea what he came in with third place with, and that was Imperial Knight Super Heavy Detachment, House Raven, 2 Armiger Helverins, and a Castellan. Follows it up with Astro Militarum Battalion of Catagen, Company Commander, Colonel Strachan, Primaris Striker, and looks like 6 squads of infantry, an Ogryn bodyguard unit, as well as a Ministrum Priest, and then 3 heavy weapon squads, all mortars, and then rounds it out with a Blood Angels Battalion, 2 jump captains with Thunderhammer and Storm Shield, followed by 3 units of 5 scouts. So nothing out of the ordinary there. However, there was one list that was out of the ordinary for 2 reasons. Number one, Mitch Pelham, who we've talked about several times on this show, normally running his Hellhound special, was actually playing Space Wolves, diving into the Codex. So it's the first time we've seen this do well. Now, if you're looking for him, he's a little further down the list. He did go undefeated on day one, was unable to compete on day two. So all we can think of is what could have been. But an interesting list when it comes to Space Wolves, and quick rundown of what he starts off with here. Begins the list with a Vanguard detachment with Najal Stormcaller, a Rune Priest, and 2 units of Aggressors. One looks like 4 models, the other one 5. And then a squad of 5 Wolfen. Then runs into a battalion featuring a Wolfguard Battle Leader, a Wolf Lord. 1, 2, 3 units of Blood Claws, looks like 5-man units each. And then a Supreme Command detachment to round it off with 2 librarians and a Ravenwing Talon Master. So interesting. He's already breaking the sacred oath of lore by mixing Dark Angels and Space Wolves. Why would he do such a thing?
So the entire reason why he did that, there's the stratagem that gives +1 attack, weapon skill, strength, and whatnot to 2 characters. But the more important part that he was trying to do, and I talk with him a lot about this stuff, he's making so that when he did play against a Castellan, it was only ever going to be hitting anything on a 6+. Because of all the minuses that
hit. That's that storm do. Power plus put it puffing smoke in the whole 9 yards.
So there's a psychic power that basically makes it so that target unit, whenever it shoots at a Space Wolf, is -1 to hit. There's a stratagem that if a Rune Priest successfully casts a power, he creates a bubble of -1 to hit. And then the Dark Angels have a couple different powers where they can cast -1 to hit on something offensively. Or -1 weapon skill, whichever way, or weapon skill plus skill, whichever way you look at it. So basically he made it so that Castellans did not
quite handy. Function. So of course when you have Dark Angels and Space Wolves together, the first thing people gravitate towards is the Line in the Wolf stratagem. Nice gimmick, or actually a viable tactic for this particular army?
I don't think it's worth doing unless you have some way to regenerate wounds on both of them, because on a 4+, they can each take a mortal wound, and those guys need to have their wounds. Getting an extra attack and an extra strength is not worth damaging them. Then again, maybe if you roll low, it's not bad, because it's only on a 4+, they take a mortal wound each.
Yeah, pretty unlikely. Well, 50-50 chance you take the wound, 1 out of 4, that both of them take the wound. Yeah, I don't know if it's really worth the payoff at that particular point. So, the other thing is, I was really excited to see the aggressors in there. but I was a little disappointed seeing such a small unit of Wolfen, kind of just a throwaway to fill in the Vanguard, or what do you think the overall...
The Wolfen were there for their aura, not for their ability to punch things. So they outflank with the aggressors and let them reroll charges.
And the aggressors lay down a heck of a lot of firepower. All right. Our second event from this past weekend is a very unique event. It is held on the Rock of Gibraltar. It is an invite-only tournament put on by the guys from SN Battle Reports. If you've not seen their video battle reports, they're something to definitely enjoy. The video quality as well as the added use of terrain and special effects makes it kind of a neat experience to watch their video. So they held No Retreat. This is the seventh version of this particular event, seventh year they're running it. And as mentioned, invite only for to attend. And despite being invite only, they still have managed 42 players for the event. So here's a quick rundown of your top eight. Eighth place, John Hall with Alatok. Seventh place was Mikey Herbert with Blood Ravens. Sixth place was Josie Salomon with Harlequins, the Dreaming Shadow specifically. Fifth place was Joe Mosconardi, I probably butchered that, with Blood Angels. Fourth place was Paulie Wallace with Drukhari, Cabal the Black Heart. Third place, Winter's SEO with Imperial Knights, playing Hawk Shroud. Second place, Tristan Whitehead with Black Legion. And your 2018 No Retreat champion is... Lewis Elms with Tau Empire, specifically Valor Sept. So unfortunately, this was only posted on their Facebook page, so not on the Best Ghost Pairings app. So we do not have any lists from this particular event. But as we get more news about this particular event, we will discuss it in future events. So that is congratulations to all our winners from there. So that wraps up our individual tournaments. There are a few team tournaments over this past weekend. Coming up after the break, we'll go over your ITC top 10 as well as upcoming events in the ITC for next weekend. Welcome back after the break. Quick review of our ITC top 10. Not a lot of action as we only had two major events over the last weekend. So starting in 10th place, Nick Gower at 617 points. Daniel Olivas has a mere 6 tenths of a point lead over him for 9th place. Jeff and Control Robinson has a mere 3-point lead over Daniel for 8th place. In 7th place, Nick Rose harvesting a mere 5 tenths of a point lead over Jeff Robinson. Joshua Death hangs in 6th place at 644 points. Archon Skari still in 5th place at 650 points, a solid 6-point lead over Josh. Matt Rutsch, your longtime champion for most of the summer, has experienced a bit of a fall here in autumn. See what I did there. But still holds a robust 41-point lead over Archon Skari for 4th place. In 3rd place, Trent Northington has a mere 1-point lead over Matt Rutsch. Mike Porter from across the pond is sitting pretty in 2nd place at 721 points. Roughly a 30-point lead over Trent Northington, but Mike still remains almost 30 points behind your current leader, which is none other than Nick Nadavati, still your ITC champion for this week. Looking ahead to next week, Ray, what events do we have in the ITC?
So we have one GT or higher level event this next weekend, and that is the Blood God Gaming Classic. And that is located in Lutherville, Timonium, Maryland.
I love that. I used to go to a lot of tournaments in that area of town. So, and a very cool name to the tournament as well. So there we go. Hopefully the next couple days we should get our FAQ drop. Looking forward to finding what changes Games Workshop will be making as they guide the meta at this point. Over the next week, we'll be looking forward for any additional updates on the drop of the FAQ from Games Workshop. As news comes across, we will send it across our Facebook page. So head over to our Facebook page, give us a like, or head us up on iTunes and give us a review. love to see what you guys have to say. Again, we can't fix it if we don't know what the problem is. So I'd love to hear what we can do to make the show better for you. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
I'm Don.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. Okay.